now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer.
And I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and we thank you for joining us. Now, alongside us in the studio today, I am very excited because the official Times Chief Stats Officer, Bill Edgar, is here. And down the line, no disrespect, Bill, but it gets even better, it's the Times Chief Football Writer, Henry Winter. Later on, because we just can't get enough of it, we'll be discussing that man, Marcelo Bielsa, again.
But we start with a pivotal game in the race for the top four at the Emirates. Arsenal host Chelsea on Saturday night, and it's certainly been an eventful week off the pitch for the Gunners. The defeat at West Ham on Saturday was set against the backdrop of the absence of Mesut Ozil from the matchday squad. Henry, as is well known, he is the highest paid player at Arsenal, but has been left out on multiple occasions. What do you make of the relationship between Ozil and his manager Unai Emery?
Well, I find Emery quite impressive on this because I think he has challenged Ozil. He has put him on an occasion. I think he had a very good game against Leicester. But he's challenged him. And he was talking in an interview, I think with Sky yesterday, Emery, about how he enjoys, and he used the word friction, to stir up players, to motivate them. And a lot of the leading managers do. Sometimes it's the arm around the shoulder, and sometimes it's the, come on, it's the Tony Adams shouting down the bus at Dennis Bergkamp after a game at Ewood Park. You know, you've got all this skill, but it's a pity you haven't won more. It's a question of challenging people, and Ozil needs to be challenged. As you say, he's on 350 grand a week. Probably not the wisest thing to give him a contract like that. It needs to be more performance related to him. But Emery is trying to drill down into the soul of Mesut Ozil and say, you are such a good player, but you're not delivering more. And from Emery's body language, I think he wants him out of the club.
But then, which is it? I mean, is he doing this as some sort of big motivational technique, raising the stakes even higher by saying, like, why don't you go elsewhere, thinking it's going to be some sort of big psychological game? Or would he rather not have him there and have an extra 350 grand a week to spend on wages?
Gab, I think it's the latter. I think he wants to free up the wages. He wants, because he's tried at the start of the season, he's tried challenging him. He's used friction. He's tried to say, listen, you know, you're such a good player, go and deliver. I mean, I think, looking at Arsenal squads, a formation of Ozil as a number 10 in the right mood, not necessarily tracking back, but, you know, Ozil's not going to do that. But if you've got Torreira and Guendouzi behind him, maybe you've got that platform. And then you have Lacazette and Aubameyang as a central two, with Aubameyang drifting wide. I think you've got a fantastic strike force. But I think Emery, judged by all signals coming out of Emirates and London Colney, is that he's looked at Ozil, he challenged him, he's used this friction, and he hasn't got the response he wants. And I think he will be quite, I don't think Ozil's going to leave now in the transfer window, but it's unless he produces something fantastic and seizes his chance, the rare occasion he gets it, I think he's leaving Arsenal.
But here's my thing, and this is what I really struggle with. First of all, I understand if it's, you know, a real top-of-the-line man motivator, scary manager who goes and challenges you like that. I would imagine Sir Alex Ferguson could do stuff like that and it would work. But here you have a guy in Unai Emery who's got a collection of Europa Leagues and who, you know, was sacked by Paris Saint-Germain. I don't know that he necessarily, and he was in 6 months into his first season. While I like him, I like the way he plays, you know, his team are in serious danger of finishing sixth again, because obviously the momentum is with United. I'm really impressed that he feels he has the stature and the backing to go and do that, or to think that this, these ploys would work with Mesut Ozil, who, you know, he's not a young player. You know, I love the fact that you raised the Tony Adams-Dennis Bergkamp thing, because in some ways when Adams was having a go at Bergkamp, Bergkamp was new to England. You know, he was coming off a massive failure at Inter Milan. You know, he was somebody who probably had something to prove, so you could push those buttons. Ozil, leaving aside his own personality, somebody's like, you know, I've won World Cups, I've won stuff that matters, I was at Real Madrid. You know, you've got a squeaky voice. And on top of that, I don't even know you have the leverage, because he's one of the two highest paid players in the Premier League. I cannot imagine a football team that would take Mesut Ozil on, except maybe somebody in China, on those wages.
Bill, what do you think Emery hasn't liked about Ozil's performances then?
I think he's just frustrated that he's seen Ozil at his best, and at his best he is a £350,000 a week player, but at his best. But unfortunately, he produces this very rarely. Far too often, I know people have said this a lot, but far too often in the games against the weaker opponents. Usually, if Arsenal are playing well, he is playing well, and if Arsenal are playing badly, the other team's dominating, he's pretty anonymous. So this is Emery's frustration. He's thinking, well, I've just got to force something out of him, either to, you know, drop him, leave him out of the squad altogether, to try and somehow prompt Ozil to have a rethink and reboot and show his talent for 90 minutes every game. Or just to make Ozil think, well, it's just not working at Arsenal, I better leave, and that will free up a lot of wage money.
It's a complete mess behind the scenes. There's been absolutely no guidance, no direction given by Stan Kroenke. And in a way, it might help Arsenal long-term if they do have a long spell out of the Champions League, because that actually might wake Stan Kroenke up to realise that the team was drifting onto the pitch under Arsene Wenger. Everyone could see that for the last 5 or 6 years. The club has been drifting within the building. Talk to people who spend time at Arsenal within the building, and there is a frustration there, partly at some of the cost cutting, partly at some of the, they've lost the Arsenal way. Arsenal always, this is not necessarily a Hillwood thing. This is an Arsenal just had a certain class, a certain way of dealing with staff, and I think that has been eroded under the Kroenke era. And particularly the problem has been in recruitment. There's been no direction there, and now it looks as if Sven Mislintat, who brought in Aubameyang, who's got a fantastic eye for player, if he is thinking of leaving because he's not being considered for the technical director's job, then again, that's a complete mess. And look, the film of Stan and Ollie is out at the moment. If you talk to Arsenal fans, they are asking why Gazidis is not in that film, because this is another fine mess. He has scarpered off to Italy. Okay, he's getting well paid there, but he's left a huge mess behind. And I have huge sympathy for Unai Emery, because he has walked it. Obviously, he wanted the job. And I take your point. He is not a world-class manager. He's not a Pochettino, a Klopp, a Guardiola. We're looking at the great talents in the Premier League. But he is the sort of pretty much the best of the rest. He's a very good second-tier manager, probably Arsenal's phase at the moment, a Europa League expert that they could get in. And I have huge sympathy for him, and that's why I will support him. First, because of patience, he deserves a chance. Secondly, because he has inherited a mess on the field and off the pitch. And I actually admire his dignity and decorum in dealing with it, because I think other managers with shorter fuses would have exploded by now, because it is pretty chaotic behind the scenes.
Okay, so you touched upon, I think this Gazidis thing is important, because let's apportion not blame, but responsibility. I wrote a piece about this earlier in the week. Round about a year ago, in the space of 10 days, Arsenal made three enormous, enormous decisions. So they knew Sanchez was leaving. They decided to take a player in part exchange, Henrik Mkhitaryan, who earns round about 180 grand a week and is... It's an enormous deal, and it's a deal that goes on until 2021. And in the past, I think since arriving, he has started all of 18 league games for Arsenal. They decided to extend Mesut Ozil's deal, making him the highest paid or second highest paid player in the Premier League, depending on what you believe Alexis Sanchez makes. And they decided to go and sign Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who Arsene Wenger turned down in the summer. And they also gave him frankly, an enormous contract. I mean, you know, Aubameyang's been very productive, but he makes Harry Kane money. These were three huge calls because none of these guys, they were 29, 29, 28 at the time. They're all a year older now. None of these guys have any resale value. The people who made those decisions, and I'm told by somebody who's one of those three people, that it really was a triumvirate making the decisions. It was Raul Sanjehi, it was Sven Mislintat, and it was Ivan Gazidis. Those three guys made that decision together. Ivan Gazidis has since left. Sven Mislintat is on his way out. What I find extraordinary is that if you go all in on those three players, you've built a team to win here and now. Wenger was not part of that decision-making. Dick Law was gone. Rowley was gone. All those people from before. If you do that, when you interview your manager in the summer, you should be able to tell him, like, guys, hey, listen, new manager candidate, we have put all our eggs in the basket with these three guys. Can you make it work with them? How will you make it work with them? And to me, that's the enormous breakdown. They've committed one-fifth of their wage bill to three guys who have zero resale value. Emery came in, and I'm sure he thought, yeah, Ozil will be a big part of my team. And now, 3-4 months later, based on what he's seen, it's not like Emery's doing this because he's mean or evil or incompetent or wants Arsenal to miss out on Europe. He did it because he thinks it's the right decision. But to me, it really is these huge decisions that have now had this massive knock-on impact. Two of the three people who made that decision are out of the picture now. When Ivan Gazidis hired Sven Mislintat, obviously you're hiring a guy who comes from German football, who is primarily a scout, and who, you know, works a certain way. And then you're hiring Raul Sanjehi, who obviously a football man, was sporting director of Barcelona, but works in a very different way, and a guy who, you know, hasn't always had that sort of technical role. You know, he worked for Nike, I believe. He's done a bunch of different things. Both have a lot of contacts, but they come from two very different cultures. They either cross-pollinate and it's wonderful and their minds are all opened and they all get along, or they don't get along, there's a clash, and there has to be somebody who's in charge. And without Gazidis there to mediate, is that the reason that we're seeing this kind of implosion?
Well, Gazidis has been part of the problem for the last 4 or 5 years. I'm not a fan of his. We had quite a few disagreements. But Gazidis is symptomatic of the problem of Arsenal in the Conker years. I think what the club need is stronger direction from the owners, actually showing an interest in the football side of the club rather than simply the money side in the side of the club. I mean, they're the Glazers with a sort of ski ranch. So absolutely, what I would like to see Conker do is appoint a proper replacement for Gazidis, who then draws all these talents, as you say, individual talents, into line. And you do have this cross-pollinization, and it improves the whole recruitment structure and the executive structure.
Well, it is Chelsea, then, that come to the Emirates Saturday evening. They are fourth in the table, 6 points ahead of Arsenal. And it looks like, looks very much like Gonzalo Higuain will be arriving on loan, reuniting him with Maurizio Sarri after they worked together at Napoli. Bill, will the Sarri ball be more achievable with Higuain in the side?
Yeah, I think Chelsea need a lift at the moment. Recently, they had a couple of young English players, Hudson-Odoi and Loftus-Cheek. They were both playing very well, but now Hudson-Odoi, there's talk of him leaving for Bayern Munich. Loftus-Cheek has got a back injury that could keep him out for quite a while. So there's a slightly downbeat feel to things. They were much more free scoring earlier in the season. They got 3 or more goals 9 times up to the end of November. They've not done it since at all. Murata and Giroud are still haven't been able to become prolific. So certainly getting Higuain in as a new striker, I think, would lift things a lot. And he's familiar with Sarri, so perhaps it would be a good move.
This thing about the mood is bad and so on, I mean, they're 6 points clear of Arsenal and Manchester United in fourth place. They are 1 point behind Tottenham, the team is so fantastic and blah, 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 and whatever. They're 1 point behind Tottenham. I don't think, you know, this is something where you roll the dice. I think this is important because it shows that Sarri got his way, right? Sarri really wanted Gonzalo Higuain. I'm really curious to see the terms of the deal because certainly the sense I got from Chelsea was that initially there was talk, you know, this has to be a permanent deal. there is no way that Chelsea were going to go and pay what would be a minimum of 45 million euros, around about 40 million pounds, for a guy who is 31 years old. And on top of that, and this is the most important part, has 2.5 years left on his contract, a contract that pays him 9.5 million euros a season net, which, if you do the numbers, is Ozil-type money, just about. Not when Chelsea have other priorities like trying to extend Eden Hazard, trying to extend Callum Hudson-Odoi, who for now is not negotiating and so on. Whether this makes sense is going to be down to two things. One is the terms. If it is, as has been reported, a 6-month loan, if the loan fee is reasonable, if Higuain somehow adjusts his wage demands, maybe even takes a teeny tiny pay cut, that wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing for him. You have to be realistic. He has scored, I think, as many goals this season as Alvaro Morata has on a Milan side who are fifth in Serie A right now. So he's been up and down. He's a temperamental guy. He gets depressed. He gets upset. In terms of technical ability, you know, he is among the top two or three guys in the world, I think, without question. But there's more to football. There's more to football than that. And I also think simply because he played with Sarri before doesn't mean that he's played with Eden Hazard and William before. And so that might also be a little bit different. But I think what is interesting is that Chelsea opted to put their faith in Sarri perhaps this January in a way that they didn't do last season with Antonio Conte.
This season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League. It is just £3 for 3 months in our January sale. Now, every Thursday at thetimes.co.uk, our very own Bill Edgar provides 11 trivia teasers for you, and here is one for you on this podcast. Which Manchester United defender, if he appears against Brighton and Hove Albion on Saturday, might see his birthday on an opposition player's shirt? Oh, that's okay. Curious.
Birthday. All right, so is it the month? Is it the,
yes,
the, I mean, the day?
It's quite vague.
Is there somebody named Christmas? Or does Jamie Easter play for Brighton?
Gosh, maybe. Yeah, we're thinking numbers, but maybe it is something else. Oh, I like what you've done there.
Do they have that defender Hogmanay? No?
Do you know what? You haven't got long to find out. Stick around until the end of the podcast to find out the answer. Now, on Monday's podcast, we spoke about the revelation that the Leeds manager, Marcelo Bielsa, had admitted to sending a club representative to spy on Derby County's training. On Wednesday, Bielsa doubled down and then some, announcing that he had, in fact, sent someone to watch every opponent train this season. Bielsa said this: "It is not illegal. I thought I wasn't violating the norm. I gathered information that I can obtain in another way. We feel guilty if we don't work enough. It allows us to have less anxiety. And in my case, I am stupid enough to allow this kind of behaviour." Henry, you said last week you felt this showed a lack of respect for his peers. What did you make then of Bielsa's announcement yesterday?
Well, it showed a lack of respect for all his peers in the Championship. I think it's interesting. I was at Southampton last night, and Lampard walked in smiling, obviously after the penalty win that Derby had. And you know, he was most aggrieved about the fact that Bielsa had sent a member of his Leeds United coaching staff to go and spy on Derby's training before their meeting last Friday. And he came out. He walked into the press conference last night, Lampard, and said, "You know, we do analysis too. Are you all ready for your presentation?" So I think that. So first, he took offence at the fact that actually Frank's quite old school. He's like old school values. He thinks there should be, you know, respect, you know, amongst rivals, and he didn't feel he got that. But also, I think he was slightly annoyed this perception that only Bielsa is meticulous in his analysis. And okay, so he's got three times the size of coaching and backroom staff as Lampard's got at Derby. But I mean, I've spent a bit of time with Lampard this week and at the training ground, and I know how much work analysis he puts in, and all the other managers in the Championship do as well. So what has Bielsa done wrong? Look, the FA are investigating, and he'll probably get a warning. The EFL are investigating. They may then have a rule change or tighten the rules. And there was a sort of sort of effectively a club charter that that all clubs signed last season. And this is slightly against that, but I think for me it's more down to the LMA. I think the LMA should be calling Bielsa to account, because it is disrespectful to his peers. They're all members of the same union.
Sorry, it's disrespectful to send somebody to watch another team's training session?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's like that. Look, he's apologised for it. Ranitzani, the Leeds owner, has apologised to Mel Morris, the Derby owner. Look, we can see all that. I think Lampard and Derby would like a little bit more contrition. But, you know, the sadness in all this is that I know what's going to happen to a lot of clubs now. The losers will be fans, because fans do like to go and watch training. And a lot of them, you know, you can see through. Fans like going along and watching it. And I think now that will all be cleared away. So I think the fans will lose out. I think there is other clubs will have found it disrespectful. What was interesting, talking to people at Derby, their initial concern and why they got a call from one of their neighbours saying there's this guy who's spying on you, they actually thought it was a safeguarding issue, because they've got academy kids there. So, you know, they have to focus on those sort of things as well as on the spy. But to be honest, I'm a huge fan of Bielsa. The moment he arrived in this country, I went and watched one of his first games, sat in one of his press conferences. All the questions were about the fact that he sat on a bucket, when I was thinking, oh, so we got one of the greatest visionary footballing minds in the country. You know, you talk to Pochettino as a disciple of his, Tata Martinez, disciple is, Guardiola talks about, Lampard's got his book. He's a great mind. So as ever with the English press and public, we focus on the personality, whereas also we need to focus on his philosophy. And I thought his PowerPoint presentation yesterday, okay, a lot of clubs do this, but I thought it was absolutely fascinating. And I think any aspiring young manager in the country, like at St. George's Park, if they could go and listen to Bielsa, I think it would be great. I think it'd also be quite good if he talked about his own tactics rather than talking at length about Frank Lampard's tactics in public, but maybe that's the mystery of signing. Look, it's brilliant that he's in this country. I think it's extraordinary we've got a coach of that quality in the Championship, and I think when he comes up to the Premier League, it will be fireworks. It'll be absolutely brilliant. But one final thing I'll say is that what Bielsa has done, probably unintentionally, he's absolutely played into the Leeds United fan psyche, the culture of that club. 1975, we were robbed in the European Cup final. The authorities against us. This siege mentality is absolute manna for Bielsa. Whether he intended to press that individual button, I don't know. But it will absolutely provide that adrenaline within Elland Road, that siege mentality that will drive Leeds United to the Championship title.
I think that sound you hear is the sound of everybody being played here. Henry's absolutely right. It's not a coincidence that Bielsa schedules his press conference for 5 o'clock, 2.5 hours before Derby County kicks off. He knows exactly what he's doing. And then 70 minutes of you showing all this nonsense? All right, you're meticulous. What does it matter? What I find incredibly interesting here, and Henry touched upon it too, the personalities, right? Imagine if that weren't Frank Lampard, who I think pretty much everybody likes and respects, and Marcelo Bielsa, who's doing very well, who maybe some people don't know, but obviously he's got a lot of pull with all those hipstery foreign football types and whatever else. So you've got these two geniuses. One is kind of mad, mysterious. Imagine if that had been somebody very few people like. Imagine if that had been Neil Warnock, you know, a guy who, when he opens his mouth, he instantly gets a ton of stick from other people. Or Alan Pardew, for example, right? Imagine if it had been one of those two guys attacking Bielsa. I think we would have had a different reaction. I don't think it matters how meticulous it is. I mean, Bielsa could just be a big brain on a life support machine watching video for 48 hours a day. It doesn't matter. If you break a norm, as he puts it, then you've broken a norm. What gets me is this idea of respect, right? So it's respectful to send an advance scout to every time your next opponent plays. That's okay, because the guy comes and you know he's there. In this case, from what was reported, a guy rocks up in an official Leeds United vehicle, stands on public ground. All this stuff about the pliers, the bolt cutters, blah, blah, blah. Hey, look, there's no pliers, there's no bolt cutters. It's just a guy standing there watching training. I remember back in 2004, after Jose Mourinho took over at Chelsea, you used to be able to go down and watch Chelsea training pretty much every day. 2004, Jose Mourinho says, no more. Sorry, fans. We're not letting the public in to watch training anymore. I hope you understand. So if Jose Mourinho, who I'm pretty sure Frank Lampard was on that Jose Mourinho side, by the way, back then, understood this in 2004, what is so difficult to understand about this today? That people might want to go and watch other managers train. This is what I find absolutely extraordinary.
I think you have to give clubs the chance to plan their tactics in private. So, and you have to draw a line somewhere. So if somebody's, for example, you wouldn't want a member of the opposition listening through the manager's door, the opposing manager's door. You wouldn't want them climbing a tree, using a long camera lens, looking through the manager's office and looking at a tactics board, or flying a drone around the training ground. You know, that's presumably that people would agree that's going too far. You know, you should have managers and coaches should have the chance to discuss things in private, make plans in private. But on the other hand, if somebody's standing in a public ground and they're not doing something extraordinary, like, you know, using a long angle lens, it's, I mean, whether you think it's possibly slightly disrespectful, but it's so hard to police anyway that really you just have to let it go. And if you're standing on public ground, I think that's fine, really. It's interesting that there's not that much you can gain, really. This is what Bielsa said as well, from watching another training session. I mean, what is actually going to be the effect on the next match's result? I mean, you're going to improve your chances by 0.001% or something. I mean, it's curious that clubs are prepared to offer injury information in the pre-match press conference. If you say, yeah, my star striker or whatever has got a bad leg and won't play, I mean, that's huge. If watching a training session is so advantageous, then there's nothing compared with knowing that the opposition star striker is not playing.
They know the information is going to get out anyway if somebody's injured.
No, not necessarily. I don't think it would get out. I mean, if it really would get out, then there's no point in the press conferences. I mean,
ask about injuries in the press conferences. They ask about other stuff.
Well, they do, yeah, but I know they do. But this information is offered by managers. They say, I know lots of them
because it's
lie
basically
or
public
they
information.
It. But it's not
the days
when
Sir Alex would
it's say, not
like,
public
oh,
if it
we
was
have 50 guys who are injured, and then you see them play the next day are over. I mean,
well, it's not public information. If it was, then the manager wouldn't need to say that. Clearly, it's not. I mean, lots of people will know, I know, but not everybody. It's right. The manager says it, and all the media says Harry Kane's injured. You know, if he hadn't, there'd have been a bit of speculation about it.
But it was mentioned before by Henry about the charter that all clubs signed, and under the governance rules of the EFL, section 2, rule 3.4, it says this: in all matters relating to the league, each club shall behave towards each other club and the league with the utmost good faith. What Leeds have done is not with the utmost good faith, is it?
That depends on. This is what really bugs me, right? I mean, I have a lot of issues with the EFL governance, but goodness me. Write something specific, right? Good faith. That can mean anything to anybody, right? They purposely write these rules that are so open-ended so that they can gauge the public sentiment and decide based on that. And I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what's going to happen here. I think Henry's absolutely right. Bielsa is going to get a warning and it's going to go away. Why? Because Bielsa has played this in a certain way that now we're all talking, oh, look, he's so meticulous. It doesn't matter how meticulous he is, like I said. If he did something wrong, he did something wrong, right? So they're not gonna get off their fence. They're not gonna go and make a stand about this one way or another and say it's okay, it's not okay. They're gonna warn him. They'll probably use wishy-washy language again to show respect, and they're just gonna wait for all of this to go away. So, you know, they can put their charter up their nose for all I care. This is just not good governance. But then again, not the first time we've seen this from the Football League.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi there, and welcome to The Sweeper, the Times' fantasy football tip service. I'm Charlie Scott with Paddy Monbear.
Hello.
And we're here to talk about game week 23.
Yes, I think we're there now. We're getting there, aren't we?
Yes.
Time's running out to arrest my current decline, but enough of my moaning. Two big injuries this week really dominated the fantasy headlines, didn't they? Harry Kane was the first one.
Absolutely. Kane, who has injured his ankle. He's out until at least the beginning of March. Tottenham are often very cryptic about injuries as well, so it wouldn't surprise me if that was the middle of March / late March. So, replacing Harry Kane. I had a look through, and it's interesting. Kane is the second top scoring forward, but there are only four forwards who have scored more than 100 points this season. And looking at the midfielders, there's 11 midfielders who have scored more than 100 points, which makes me think better to look a bit cheaper in the forward department. I mean, Marcus Rashford at 7.5 million is great value, and then that allows you to just plough loads of money into midfield where there's a lot of value to be had.
Yeah, I think, strange as it might sound, a Kane injury could be a bit of a blessing for managers who have him, because you have to sell him, obviously, and when the best options are Rashford, Jimenez, maybe even Danny Ings, that gives you so much money to play with that if you're without Mohamed Salah, you can easily get him, or you can upgrade three other players across your squad at the same time while taking maybe an 8-point hit, avoid having to play the wild card necessarily, and suddenly you've revamped a squad that you weren't necessarily that happy with beforehand.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, say you did those three strikers, Jimenez, Rashford, Ings, you can feasibly have Salah, Hazard and Sterling, or Sane, which...
Yeah. And a couple of premium defenders, maybe a good keeper. I mean, you wouldn't have to rely on such budget options, which you've had to if you had Kane, Salah and Hazard for the past few weeks. So
yeah, absolutely. And another injury that's flown under the radar a little bit because of Kane, but Trent Alexander-Arnold out for a month.
Liverpool struggling a bit. It means, I think, James Milner plays more at right back, which means Salah doesn't take penalties. That's a bit of a niche analysis on that. But looking at replacements, there's some pretty obvious options, I think. Luke Shaw is playing for a good Man United side now. Lucas Digne is basically a winger. Jan Bednarek is less than 4 million and starting for Southampton side, who have some nice games coming up. So you're not sure of options there, but obviously you've just got to use a transfer on that, which is a pain.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about potentially the wildcard options last week with the second wildcard. Still, I would hold fire if you can make the changes replacing Kane and Alexander-Arnold and take a -4, -8 point hit. I think that's worth doing rather than going wild and playing the wildcard now.
I agree. Much more of that in this week's email. If you sign up at thetimes.co.uk/fantasyfootball, pop your email address in and you'll get an email from us on Friday morning.
Yeah, and as always, there's a Facebook group where you can get our feedback on your teams or transfer tips, etc. Just search for The Sweeper on Facebook.
Time now for our weekly predictions game. A reminder that I lead 11-6 this season. But of course, Gab, you were victorious in our first outing of 2019.
Calendar year 2019, I am undefeated.
One up. You are one up. All right, then. We've spoken about Arsenal against Chelsea. A big game to come on Saturday night. Go on, then. You tell me what you're going for.
I'm not going for an Ozil hat trick.
really?
I think Chelsea can do it. I think Chelsea can trip them up after the kind of week that they've had with Mislintat and Ozil and all this nonsense. And, you know, Ramsey, we expect the contract soon. So I'm going to say Chelsea to win 2-1.
Ooh, okay. Interesting. Oh, everything you've just said, it does make me want to sway what I thought. But I'm actually going to go with an Arsenal win. I'm going to go for a 2-1 Arsenal win.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. A bit different.
Huddersfield and Manchester City. My man Wags has left the building.
Yes.
I do feel a little bad for him. And of course, there's no Aaron Moy.
Yes.
Which is the guy we always have to mention Aaron Moy. Philip Billing when Huddersfield play. They take on Manchester City.
Doesn't get any easier for them, does it?
But
bottom of the table as well.
Mm. It's at Huddersfield Ground.
Yes.
Which, did it used to be called the McAlpine?
Many years ago.
What is it now?
John Smith's.
Good bit of bitter, is it? Or some sort of drink?
That's right. John Smith is some kind of northern beer that people drink?
Yeah. John Smith's bitter. Yeah.
Was that the ad with the guy where they were juggling the ball and he like boots it and says Abbott?
Oh, I don't know. I can't remember.
Was it like Peter Kay or something?
Maybe. Right. I don't know.
I'm too old.
Does that impact your prediction for this one?
City to win 3-0.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm going for a City 4-0 win.
4-0?
Yeah. Game on. London Derby at Craven Cottage. Fulham against Tottenham. That's on the Sunday. You've predicted two, first of all, so I'll go first this time, just to be fair. Yes, exactly. I am going to go for a 2-1 Tottenham win.
Showing no faith in Craven Claudio. Well, I'm going to go in the other direction.
No.
Well, yeah, there's no Harry Kane.
I know. That's
there's no there's no Heung-min Son. There's no Moussa Dembele. Hasn't been for long. There's been no... You know what's amazing about Tottenham? Is it Dier and Wanyama? I feel like these guys have been gone for months. I mean, I know Wanyama really has been. Dier probably less so. They haven't missed a beat. I think at some point chickens come home to roost. And of course, it's such a raucous, fiery, intimidating cauldron at Craven Cottage. So yeah, I'm going to go for the Fulham victory, 1-0.
Ooh, interesting. Okay.
In your wheelhouse, Natalie.
Yes.
Forest and Bristol City. Bristol City, who I know this... They're managed by the clever guy whose dad used to be the Latvia manager or Yeovil.
Yes.
Gary something or other.
Johnson, yes. Yeah,
and his son's name is?
Lee.
Lee Johnson, there you go. And they're taking on two-time European Cup winners Nottingham Forest.
Mm.
Managed by two-time European Cup winner Martin O'Neill.
Yes.
Did he win both of them? Was he on the team for both?
You sure? I think he played in one. Was he just
he was
in
a substitute
squad
in one of them. Yeah, I think.
All right.
At the City Ground then. I'm not sure about this one. I am actually...
When you say at the City Ground, you mean it's not actually at the City Ground.
No.
I mean it's at the City
Ground. The City Ground.
Nottingham Forest are at home.
Are at home. Yes, this is right. Quite,
not at
quite.
Bristol City's ground.
Not
just,
at Bristol
just for the
City's
of
ground. No. They are at Forest. I think this might be a bit tight. I'm going for a 1-1 draw.
Interesting one. I may join you in that prediction. I expect a 0-0 with...
Really?
Yes, with a lot of green buses parked.
Serie A returns. This is your neck of the woods now, isn't it?
Yes.
Serie A. And we've got a massive one. I say it returns, that's because they've been on a winter break. And we've got Napoli against Lazio.
Yeah, Lazio this season have a history of getting points against smaller teams, less so against bigger ones. They're away from home, Napoli. They either score early and then score a lot of goals, or they struggle and they score late. I think one way or another, Napoli are getting this. I'm going to say Napoli to win 1-0.
Oh, okay. I've done my research on Napoli, and for the last few seasons, they always seem to hammer Lazio in one of their games in the league. Last season, they won actually both games 4-1. The season before that, they won 3-0. And in 2015, they were 5-0 winners. Yeah. So I'm going for a 3-1 win for Napoli.
There you go. Just to put some pressure on league-leading Juventus.
Just time to give you the answer to Bill Edgar's trivia teaser. We asked which Manchester United defender, if he appears against Brighton and Hove Albion on Saturday, might see his birthday on an opposition player's shirt. Now, Bill, obviously, first of all, you think of the numbers. And then, obviously, then Gab brilliantly started thinking about the names and what that could mean. And perhaps
I was thinking of Bong.
Bong.
Because I was assuming that's what Bill was indulging in when he wrote this question, but
so it's perplexed us a little.
Well, the answer is Marcus Rojo, and I just have to add that he's unlikely to play, but he is fitting around the club because he's talking about moving. But the reason his birthday's on an opposition player's shirt is that his birthday is March the 20th.
Solly March, yes, and Solly March was number 20.
Yeah.
That was his homage to Marcus Rojo because he had Rojo's picture up on his wall when he grew up.
That's right.
Oh, that's,
I didn't even think
really
of the
month. I forgot about Solly March.
Oh, that's a good one, Bill.
Because, of course, I knew that Marcus Rojo was born on March 20th.
Yes, yes, if only you put the two and two together. Okay, that is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, Bill Edgar and Henry Winter.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online, from The Times mostly, and also on your smartphone or tablet. It's just £3 for 3 months in our January sale. I think that's a deal and a half. Mm-hmm. Search The Times subscription for more information.
We'll be back on Monday after another action-packed Premier League weekend.
How psyched are we that it's an action-packed Premier League weekend?
Who doesn't love action-packed
nonsense?
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.